So a question for maybe Alex and Andrea, because you both work respectively at the university and the city. This question is from Lauren, who's a student. How is San Marcos working with the college to reform the streets mainly used by students, and when will the university possibly be car free? So I take this to mean, you know, is there some sort of partnership between the city of San Marcos and the university to try to mitigate the traffic based on you know, heavy student use? Because obviously there may be people who live in San Marcos who are not students, who don't use the same kind of pathways. But any thoughts on that?
Before I begin, I just want to say that I have the ability to speak for the university in some capacities, and others I'll be using my own sort of opinion. In my experience, the university works with the city in many ways. Typically, it's more on a project-by-project basis instead of we're going to reduce traffic, or we're going to do this or that in big picture ways, at least at the level that I work at. I do think that there's something to be said for thinking of all people in San Marcos together, as opposed to a student who also lives in the city. It's like, well, isn't that a city resident too? Right, because, you know, all students, they're not students when they go home, especially if they live in town, it's a city resident. So that's something that even the council seems to conflate together. It's kind of weird. I do think that there's opportunities for more holistic coordination between the two entities, but that doesn't really happen. I think that also there's been very little work on making the university car free. I will say that that it's very complicated which roads the university actually owns as far as right of way. Like, you can actually have different blocks on the same street where there'll be different owners, some of which aren't even the city or the university. So it can make big road projects really, really complicated.
So I think holistically, collaboration is really important. Students are a part of our community. And so when we plan, students are going to shops, using the roads, using the infrastructure. You guys are the ones who are walking around, biking around, have the ability to move about. And so it's important that we do collaborate on those pieces. A project that's going on right now is the transit plan is kicking off. They had public meetings I believe 2 weeks ago to actually look at transportation and transit facilities and working to collaborate. And so that plan is kicking off. It's actually making a 5-year plan for how we're going to handle transportation working together. And so that's really important. But I think there is a lot to be said in the collaboration pieces. And we were just talking about downtown and students really support downtown as well, and walking to it, shopping there, and eating at restaurants. And so big part of our economy as well. So.
Is there any connection with streets that are maybe more traversed by students rather than people who are also residents but not students? Do you think that's a factor at all and should play into considerations?
So if students use the streets more often, should they be favored in some way? Is that what you're...
Well, I guess just taking that knowledge in hand and knowing there's going to be a lot of people going to the same place, taking kind of the same commute routes, because of the presence of any sort of institution, in this case the university, how do you think that might affect the planning as far as public transit and alternative forms? Should there be any sort of a difference in planning, in especially as it relates to the partnership between the university and the city, given that those factors?
Yeah, I think one of the practices with planning is you identify corridors. So where are people going? I can tell you now, Comanche, everybody drives down Comanche to get out of town. It's just, you don't want to take Guadalupe, you're going down Comanche, or you're taking Guadalupe. So I think looking at corridors and actually from a multimodal perspective, the bike lanes are being constructed on Guadalupe that are still in sort of that in-between phase, not completed yet, but is really looking at how people are moving and where they're moving and sort of where development is going. So I think identifying that's important to planning for transportation. So.
And then just to jump in on the sort of student side, I remember being a student having no car, and that was not by choice. Well, sort of by choice, but it was also because I had no money. Cars are really expensive, and having to have a car adds huge amounts of burden on already overburdened budgets. So figuring out ways for folks, whether they're students or lower income residents of San Marcos, to move around without a car is a key economic issue as well. And I'll just sort of throw that in there because we've talked about it kind of purely from a transportation perspective, but it's also an economic issue as well.
So another question here from Austin, who's a student. What, if anything, can be done about driver attitudes towards cyclists on the road, i.e. people, drivers acting aggressive towards cyclists, dehumanization of cyclists, and factors like that? Does that kind of play into the bikeability, per se, of a city? And if so, are there ways to maybe manage that?
So I think in a practical sense, let me tell you why I think this. I have a certification from the League of American Bicyclists in how to actually ride safely on the road. The practical way to manage driver perceptions or sort of behavior with you when you're riding a bike is to actually ride in the very smack dab middle of the lane and force the driver to go around you as a car, because most of the time, the most unsafe situations when you're on a bike in terms of cars being around you is when they try and pass you and there's not enough and they don't give you enough room, and then that either causes you to crash or they hit you, which causes you to crash, which is a big problem. So backing up, the overtaking collision where a car just runs you down, they're the most dangerous when you're on a bike, but they're actually fairly rare. It's like less than 5% of most bike car interactions. So you're much better off though being as visible as possible and forcing cars to treat you like a little car in the absence of other infrastructure. And I promise I'm not a full-on John Forrester vehicular cyclist, but that is the best way to teach people.
So do you mean though, that philosophy changes depending on what kind of road you're on, right?
Honestly,
you're riding down like 123 in the middle of the lane.
Yes, if there is enough of a shoulder for you to be in the on the shoulder, then that's great. But you would be safer if there was no shoulder, probably in the middle of the road.
So this is a perfect example of why motorists don't like cyclists, and why cyclists are doing the thing that is the safest to do. So the Netherlands I apologize for doing the Netherlands again. I go there. So they actually have the highest satisfaction of drivers anywhere in the world. And the reason is that there's a space for cyclists and then there's a space for cars. And so cyclists are happy, cars are happy, or drivers are happy, and then everyone is safer. It's when you mix modes at different speeds that you run into safety problems and hazards. And so on a slow speed street, taking the lane works really well, and that's what the Dutch do, and that's why Vision Zero works at slow speeds. But at speeds above about 20 miles an hour, the whole situation is incredibly challenging, and it also means that I don't ride on those streets anymore. I've actually changed categories of cyclists. I used to be the fit and fearless guy who was in, you know, ride anywhere, and then I was like, I've got a kid, I should probably not get run over. So I switched gears, and it's really interesting to move categories and think about safety from a different perspective. And then go to another place where they created a safe system for me and everybody, it's happy and it works. So there's a sort of structural answer to that question that we kind of have been avoiding. There's like the interactions between the cars and the cyclists, and they don't work out really well. But really there's a design question of our streets, and we need to design our streets better to avoid those type of interactions.
Yeah, unfortunately in San Marcos, we do have to differentiate when we're in a downtown setting and you can take the lane and it's great, and a car should treat you like another car at a stop sign or an intersection. We do that thing where we take turns and we go through and it's all fine. And then you get into other situations where you have to change your mindset. Now you're actually choosing your routes because they have a shoulder, even if that means I have to go a lot farther. But I switch gears between being in the downtown setting and being somebody who's on bigger roads, but it is scary, and it was something that I had to learn and become more comfortable with. So trying to be safe and aware.
But just to be the minority report a little bit, like, so I wouldn't suggest riding in the middle of 1, 2, 3, especially out towards Seguin, because that's very unpleasant. But if you're riding on Ocarina, probably the safest place for you is going to be in the middle of the road if there's not the bike lane. And I think that one thing that is sort of hard to say that, because you'll be telling people that and they're like, you're crazy. I've done lots of personal riding on that corridor, and I've tried riding on the edge, and it's not good. And if you're riding in the middle of the road, people tend to more or less leave you alone and just pass you. It's uncomfortable if you're not used to it. But I think that, a lot of, there's also times where there are people who are forced into those marginal situations because of their economic situation. And so if you see someone riding in the middle of the road and you're in your car, maybe they're on their way to work and they can't afford insurance, and that's the only way they have to get around.
So. Yeah, I've done my own ad hoc study of this, individually. It takes like 3 seconds. So it's like, from a driver's perspective, it's okay. Like, I don't think I've ever gotten past like six seconds. Like, it seems like it's forever because you're like trying to dance, but it really isn't that long from a driver's perspective. So give people some space, and then we can build better roads too.
So we have a question from a community member. So we're talking about the Netherlands a fair bit, but that is much more densely built than Texas, specifically, the San Marcos area. How much more density in both housing and retail workspace-wise does San Marcos need to be able to support that kind of multimodal transportation goal and also reduce parking demands?
Yeah, good question. The 50% of trips in the United States are 3 miles or less, and it's somewhere around the same in the Netherlands, just to give you a sense. So it's clearly denser in the Netherlands, but the number of trips that happen within a short distance is actually very similar. Land use and density, complicated and important issues, but longer term, if you fix your streets, you can capture a lot of trips. When we were talking about sort of taking the lane, the only people you're gonna get to do that are people who are, really into cycling. And so you don't get like my 10-year-old. Sure. And so if we want mode share change, we have to change the streets. And then we also need land use change and density changes to create the destinations and accessibility of our communities. But we need to be doing both at the same time. Maybe I'll turn it over to an actual land use planner for that.
So I was actually looking at Davis, California today, and they are a college town that's a little bit, I guess, south of Sacramento. They have the same population that we do. I think they're at 68,000, we're about 66,000. And they are this bike capital city. When you look at their map, essentially go to Google, and you can sort of see how they've developed and grown. And UC Davis is an agricultural school, and so I think a lot of it is because farmland is used for a specific purpose there. It's not blackland prairies like we have, and it's changing, differently, and so they haven't necessarily grown out. But it's really interesting to see how it is one of the top biking cities, and when you're looking at it, it's about 9 square miles versus 30 or so that we are in terms of city limits. And I can see why it's bikeable, because you can move around and go to Google Street View and see how you move about. So when you do have sort of that downtown setting in our downtown, it's where you see most walkers, you see most bikers. I see people sometimes come and park to go on a run because they enjoy being in that particular setting. So land use definitely does have a lot to do with it, but it is complicated and it is challenging to change the way that we design here in Texas. But I think there's a lot of research around it. So.
Just to jump in as a fun fact, did y'all know that the first bike lane in the United States was in Davis, California, and it was enacted by Ronald Reagan when he was the governor? So I find that fascinating.
So we have a question from a community member. What would be the feasibility of having something like a pedestrian-only zone in downtown San Marcos?
So there's I can't remember where it was. There's an A&M study that was done a long time ago. So there's an old historic book where some students basically were drawing out a plan for downtown 70s, 80s, and they envisioned a pedestrian streets. And I thought it was really cool because we have that book in our department. We're like, they were thinking about it way back when. And so I think that's a great idea. Kissing Alley a lot of times functions that way. And so that's something, you know, I think is being talked about in the community. So see.
Yeah, a lot of opportunities in alleys, particularly because they're not heavily trafficked. Then you need to work on deliveries and how do you incorporate deliveries. But there's a lot of opportunity of thinking about kind of these unused spaces. And then one of the things that we did in the Netherlands is you go out and you map your city. Where are people going? Where are people walking? Where are people biking? Where are deliveries happening? And you can go out and kind of map it, and then you can get a sense of where you might try an innovative project. And it can be a really helpful way to sort of jumpstart it. And then you also don't need to change the whole world all at once. You can try a pilot project and see if it works. And clearly you need to do it in a place that, you know, doesn't create giant political blowback. But there's some opportunities to think about pilot projects and rethinking streets. And oftentimes you do a pilot project and the world doesn't end. In fact, it's kind of pleasant. And then people see the opportunities and then it gives you some chance to rethink use of space.
So we have a question from a student, Amy. In cities like Austin that are experiencing simultaneous urban sprawl as well as inner city growth, where should resources be put as far as developing city center areas into maybe more bikeable or pedestrian friendly areas, or managing that kind of external growth? I mean, say you have finite resources. I mean, how what's a good way to break that up, and how should that maybe be prioritized?
Well, just to jump in, I think that honestly, whenever there's development, whether it's in the inner city or on the periphery, it should be development that is connected by roads and paths that are able to be traversed by people on bikes, people on foot, or people in cars. So you're moving, the goal becomes not moving cars from the periphery to the center or moving cars around the inner city. It becomes moving people, whether they be in cars, buses, on foot or on bikes, which seems to sort of almost never happen, especially in terms of urban sprawl. They just put a development out on, you know, a county road and then wait for somebody, the county, the city, somebody to come widen it and expand it at some point. Yeah.
So a couple of points there. Then this is the sort of larger sort of metrics. What gets measured gets managed, and we manage the wrong things. And we measure the wrong things. So right now, we always have limited budgets. There are limited budgets for this, and there are limited budgets for that. What do we do about it? This week, one of the large transportation organizations in DC basically came out and said that we shouldn't be pushing for more money in our transportation bills. In fact, what we should do is fix what we've got first. So first priority, fix what we've got first. If we can't afford to fix it, then we shouldn't build more. That's a starting point. Second, what we should be doing is we should be aiming for certain mode share goals. Climate change is in the background of all these conversations. Every time we build a new road, we're generating more greenhouse gas emissions. If we're serious about this, which we're not, but let's say we were, what we would start to do is rethink how we build our transportation systems, and we would manage for mode share goals. And then I can go on because there's a number of other points, but those two would be good starting places to think about it. Let's fix what we've got first, and then let's build systems and aim for increasing our walking, biking, and transit goals. Given the resources we've got now, we could do that. It's a political choice, and we continue to choose not to do that. But we could if we wanted to.
Bringing this local to San Marcos, Andrea, do you have any insight on kind of how that's playing out as far as development? Obviously, we're seeing a lot of particularly residential development in the area, and a lot of it is focused in the city center, but increasingly the outskirts are being developed as well. Is there some sort of plan to be prioritize one over the other, or how is that kind of playing out?
Yeah, so in San Marcos, we have a comprehensive plan. It was adopted in 2011 and 2013. And it essentially was a community-wide effort to determine as we grow, where are we going to grow? Where would we concentrate people as we grow? Where would we concentrate resources? And then what would be the goals associated with that, with housing, with the environment? This plan is out there, and it has essentially areas where we've said, this is where the community said, as we grow, where we should be essentially putting people and putting infrastructure. Downtown is definitely where a lot is growing. And I think it is a tough world we live in Texas for how we do grow. But I think if we stick really to the goals that we have, we can grow sustainably. Just making sure that we continue to push that and make sure what we do is aligning with what the policy is probably the most important thing we can do. And making sure that as we grow, we continue to look at updates. So you can't just look at a plan that was from forever ago. Planning and cities are constantly evolving, and so we have to focus those resources.
So we have a question here about the kind of alternative transit systems, and how would they affect students who maybe don't live near the downtown city center or the campus area, who are commuting by bus or some other way. The question is, would they be encouraged to bike to campus, or is there some other way, or how does that all play out? If it's not, you're maybe not in reasonable biking distance, which is obviously relative, but say you're a fair ways out of the city, what's good for those students? Is that increasing bus traffic, or what does that look like?
It is my genuine belief that anywhere in the city limits is within easy biking distance of any other point in the city. But not everyone thinks
says
that.
The shuttle manager.
That's right. And honestly, most of our trips, even on our bus, are entirely walkable. So I'm looking at you, Campus Loop. I do think that increasing the bus service, especially on the periphery, would be helpful. The problem with that, of course, is resources. So one of the things that the coordinated transit study is doing is it's basically, the university has a lot of resources. The city has the federal designation to be the transit in our area, in our urban area. And what that means is that if we combined our efforts together, we could use the university's resources and the city's designation to bring a lot more money into our transit, which would then equal a lot more service, which would maybe let us serve more areas. As it is now in the shuttle, all of our resources are allocated. If we add anything anywhere, we have to take it from somewhere else, which generally is just kicking the problem to some other group, and we try not to do that. So don't know if I quite answered the question.
And there's a survey out there that you can take if you go to sanmarcostx.gov/transitplan, I believe. And you can go in, if you do live on the outskirts of town, there's input you can give that's actually being incorporated into the plan that's being created. So hopefully in a few months, there might be a better answer to that of how the city and the university might move forward. So.
Cool. And so for the final of these questions, then we'll open it for a few minutes to the floor. How can our transit system be designed to serve people, not cars? We've kind of flirted around this issue a lot today, but do you have any kind of major takeaways about how one would go about designing in that fashion?
So two levels. First, resources that we've got now. There's a lot of sort of interesting rethinking of transit routes and then sort of thinking about frequency of routes. And one of the things you've seen in Houston and Austin and several other cities is sort of taking their transit systems and adding higher frequency routes using what's already available. And that is really helpful because then you know when the bus is going to come, and then it's much more sort of likely that you'll take it. Secondly, from a larger structural perspective, we're just investing in the wrong things. Like, we're a rich country. We could do this. We don't do this because we don't fund it. And so there's the political will question. That's why it was such a great question earlier about how do we get there. It's really about push. And if we want change, we need to push for change, for safe streets, for transit, for rethinking how we build our transportation systems. And it doesn't happen overnight, but it happens because people care and people keep showing up and pushing.
Yeah, I think getting involved, you all have a lot of power. You do. And when you get involved, people listen. So if you're passionate about this, get involved. There are so many ways. There are groups you can join, advocacy groups, or, you know, joining commissions. You can apply for things. So I cannot stress how much power you all have to be able to push things as you believe in. So, yeah.
So I've worked here for 5 years and no one's ever asked for a bike lane at Texas State.
I'd like a bike lane. Actually, I'll jump. I want a cycle track and a bioswale. Can I get one? No?
We'll see.
Okay.
We'll see.
Sorry. You asked. So. That's great. So more pushing, I think, is what's needed.